Dr. Google can't fix your knee. The Joint Relief Institute can. Fast joint pain relief, covered by Medicare. Call 708-888-0000, as in zero pain.
Holiday sounds from Ukraine. Let's check in with Joseph Lindsley. Joe, what are we listening to exactly here?
Bob, good afternoon from snowy and cold Lviv. It's a very festive day here. This is the Carol of the Bells, which is known throughout the world. And it's a Ukrainian composition. So as you hear this this melody, as people go around Chicago and go around, you know, preparing for Christmas, it might be good to recall that this is a song, a melody that comes from Ukraine. And even as Ukrainians are in their existential fight, there is a festive Christmas spirit. As we've talked about, Ukrainians really do appreciate holidays. And today, December 6th, is St. Nicholas's Day. Which in Ukraine, that's the traditional day for the giving of the gifts. And so as you go about Lviv, and Lviv is a city that really, it does feel like an old world city. Unlike the cities in eastern Ukraine, the Soviets were not able to destroy tradition here as they were in the eastern parts of Ukraine. And so as you walk the streets in these days of December, you hear people singing, choirs, accordions, the churches are crowded. And today people are walking around carrying gifts. It's also the day of the armed forces of Ukraine, a day to show gratitude to those who are fighting against the Russian invaders. And there's something else remarkable, because normally, I mean, this is the first time that Ukrainians as a nation, whether they're Greek Catholic or Orthodox, have celebrated St. Nicholas Day on December 6th. And it's the first time they've celebrated this holiday on the same day as Western Christians since 1582. Because in 1582, Pope Gregory realigned the calendar to be more in accord with the Earth's course around the sun, and people in the Eastern world stuck to the old original calendar. And so in Ukraine, since 1582, all major holidays, including Christmas, were celebrated about 2 weeks after they were in the West. But Ukrainians have made this profound change this year. They want to discard everything to do with Moscow in every way, including Moscow's long, sort of centuries-old attempts to control the Orthodox Christianity. And so, and I've really been amazed at how easily Ukrainians have made this transition. They simply are celebrating their holidays on different dates, really without much of a thought, but still with the same enthusiasm that they had in times before. And so, you know, as we look at this, the situation here, and then, you know, everyone is sort of keenly paying attention to what is happening, especially in Washington, and the debates about funding for Ukraine. And so I think as you listen to this Carol of the Bells, you know, you can hear that the cheerful melody, but there's also this dreadful pace, sort of an urgency. And so I'd say that that song really describes well the feeling here these days.
I'm sure it does. Moscow has repeated that they are ready for talks with Ukraine. What do we make of this? Has anything changed? I know you're laughing because, as you've pointed out many times, you can't believe anything they say. And I guess the position there of the Ukraine government has not changed either, has it?
Well, first, whenever we say Ukrainian government, it's the people. It's the people who refuse to surrender. You know, remembering those early days and weeks of Russia's full-scale invasion, the government was in pretty good degree of chaos, and it was the citizens and the people that defended the country. It was 2014 when the citizens demanded to turn away from Moscow control of their politics, and they had their revolution. And so the government has to represent the will of the people, and that does get lost a lot in the Western reporting on this. That's why, you know, they refer to Kyiv, you know, Kyiv did this or Kyiv did that, but really it's the Ukrainian people. And whenever, I mean, you know, the fact that Moscow would even say that they're open to talks, would, you know, why would they be open to talks now? We have to ask. You know, 1 year ago, when they were sending 100 missiles a week to Ukrainian cities, and there was no power and no electricity throughout much of Ukraine, for most, you know, I mean, we had rolling blackouts every single day. And why then was Moscow not interested in talks? Because Moscow had the upper hand. They were in a very strong position. They didn't want talks. They thought that they could crush Ukraine through the winter. They failed to do so. Ukrainians adapted and they survived. But now that's not happening. Now, of course, Moscow is pushing for talks. And, you know, we see the strange shift of the reality in recent headlines. For example, there was the cover of the Wall Street Journal yesterday, ostensibly a positive story about a Ukrainian sniper that set the Guinness Book of World Records for the longest sniper shot in history. And so it was a positive story. Front page, top of the fold headline, except it said this. The headline was, "Struggling Ukraine touts sniper as record setter." And there's this sense now that whenever you say Ukraine, and the media sort of does this in lockstep, you have to put that adjective struggling before Ukraine. At the same time, we have the Washington Post today with a story, front page story, I think, saying stalemate, Ukraine's failed counteroffensive. Miscalculations divisions marked offensive planning by U.S. Ukraine. And all of a sudden, there's all this negative press. There's Moscow saying time to negotiate. And meanwhile, here, I mean, you know, if you've been here every single day, as I have, you know, this is the calmest Ukraine has been since the full-scale invasion. The cities are largely protected by air defense. Moscow is not able to attack Ukrainian infrastructure for various reasons. And all that is being missed. And this is actually a moment of Ukrainian strength. There are a few smart people that are able to get through the filters and to describe this reality. The Times of London, the newspaper in the UK, on their Times Radio podcast today, they just released an episode with a retired top American general, Peter Zwack. And he actually spent a lot of time in Russia as an attaché, defense attaché. And he's pointing out that right now in the front lines, Russians are dying in the hundreds or thousands. And the Russian officers are squandering this period of Western distraction that began after after Hamas invaded Israel. And so if you look a little bit closely, we could see that if you're going to think about applying the adjective struggling to Ukraine, at the very least, you should also be doing that to Russia.
Yeah, that's a very interesting perspective on the media coverage, and those little things do shape public opinion. Before we let you go today, Joseph, we get a lot of feedback on your reports, emails and texts from the listeners, and let me get to one today. Bob, when you speak with Joseph, ask him if the Wagner Group giving air defense to Hezbollah could be payment or trade for Iranian suicide drones. It might expose Russian financial weakness or collusion with Iran to diminish the U.S. weapons supply. What about that?
I think that's a great point that we should be absolutely investigating instead of, you know, and this is, you know, for example, the fact that the Washington Post would do with this deep dive into what happened in Ukraine's counteroffensive, but spend no investigative resources on the alliance of Hamas, Hezbollah, and Moscow, and the Wagner Group has been sort of Russia's key pawn of that. You know, Russia uses Wagner for plausible deniability there, especially when Prigozhin, its leader, was still alive. They could say, "Oh, that wasn't us. That was Wagner." This is where we need investigative resources. It's tougher to do it because there's no freedom of the press in Moscow. It's harder to dig, but that's precisely where we need good reporting. And you know, one thing to remember, especially as we look at the debates in Washington and what's happening all over the world and the focus on the Middle East and Israel. 1994, December 5th, so yesterday was the anniversary, 30 years ago from yesterday, in Budapest, Ukraine agreed to give up its nuclear weapons, not only its nukes, but also other advanced weapons. In exchange, they agreed to give them up, and in return, the United States, the United Kingdom, and Russia agreed to provide security assistance to Ukraine. So Ukraine, in good faith, in its first years of freedom after centuries of Moscow oppression, agreed to give these things up, pressured by the United States and the UK and Russia and a little bit by China and France. And in return, they promised in this Budapest memorandum, "We're going to protect you forever." And here we see the strength of that agreement in these debates in Washington, where there's lessening support for Ukrainian victory.
As always, we appreciate your reporting, Joseph. Talk to you tomorrow.
Until tomorrow. Thank you, Bob.